Hello, everyone. This is Noah Villaverde, host of Blank Green Canvas, back again with another episode of this podcast. And once again, I am joined by
John Maffeo, aka Mothman Jones.
And before we continue on with the latest episode of this podcast, I just got to ask John, how have you been and what have you been watching besides the two things we are going to be discussing today?
I have been good. We recently, more apartment updates. We got our blinds and nice. Just been getting nicer weather here. So just kind of been trying to take advantage of it, going outside, taking walks. Movies that I've been watching, I watched the Snyder Cut. And since Godzilla vs. Kong is coming out soon, there's been a lot of like random Godzilla movies on. So I watched Godzilla vs. Gigan the other night, and it had a couple other monsters in it. Fun B-movie stuff. What about you?
Oh, that's cool. We've been doing all right as well. We're still waiting for our blinds, obviously, to get in. I'm still using a makeshift fabric for a curtain. But in terms of movies that I checked out, besides, obviously, the Snyder Cut, I also watched a little bit. I put it on for my dad and another family friend of ours. They wanted to watch Kong Skull Island to get on, obviously, on the whole Godzilla versus Kong thing. And hopefully theaters open up near me soon, because even though it will be on HBO Max, on March 31st, I still want to see that on a big screen first, you know, because that's a movie tailor-made for that big screen experience, obviously. So yeah, things have been going all right. And for everyone listening and watching this on YouTube, we are going to be discussing two things today. In fact, this episode of the podcast will probably be the longest title ever, just by virtue of the two titles that we have to discuss today. The first thing we're going to be discussing, we're going to give our brief thoughts and also some spoilers in regards to the long-awaited Zack Snyder's Justice League, which is the ever elusive Snyder cut that has been the subject of a lot of fans like clamoring for it for 3+ years, almost 4 years in fact, which is crazy to think about, isn't it?
That is crazy. So long time just flies.
Yeah, so I dropped a video today kind of giving a review of the Snyder Cut in about 6 minutes or so. So for those who want to check that out, you can check it out on my channel, Blank Green Canvas, where I kind of give my own spoiler-free thoughts if you want to see what I think of the film there first. But before I get into some of my thoughts further here, I wanted to ask John, what did you think of the Snyder Cut? What were your expectations going in, especially in comparison to the original 2017 cut? Because obviously there's been a lot of tumultuous production troubles on that film. What were your thoughts on the whole experience, really?
So quick pretext, I wasn't a fan of Batman vs. Superman all that much. So going into Justice League after all the news came out, I wasn't really into the idea. I saw the movie in 2017. I enjoyed it, but it kind of like passed in and out of my head. And it's one of the most forgettable movies I've seen in my entire life, if I'm being honest, looking back at it now. But I didn't really look at this with much expectations, even when it was announced. I was like, it's cool, but I didn't really think anything of it. I'm like, I'll watch it and see how it is. But I thought it was just going to be one of those, like, I'll watch it and I'll experience it. And I'll be like, all right, good for the fans who wanted it. And that's it. So then I put it on. I was off the day that it came out, so I got up really early so I would have the whole morning to watch it. And
yeah, it's 4 hours long.
4 hours long. So I started watching it at like 6:50 and ended just before 11. And at the end of it, I had a couple tears roll down my eyes at some point toward the end, and I was like, "There's no fucking way." Pardon my French. That I thought this movie was as good as it was. But like, I want to buy it on Blu-ray and I want to watch it again. I'm flabbergasted at how much I like this. I like the whole, I mean, I'm not going to get into deep cut right now, but I just liked how it like, I see what Zack Snyder's doing and trying to create like a godlike posture for these heroes and kind of make them like this new mythology, so to speak, with Greek legends and whatnot. And I really like how he like creates his, I really think his larger than life scenario here really works. And there are a lot of great character moments, and I think everybody gets their moment to shine. And there are some Snyderisms in them in the movie that like I could do without, but like it didn't bother me at any point. And I thought the movie is pretty well paced too, which I was very surprised by. But I'm super surprised.
Yeah, I was Yeah, going into it, like when they announced that the movie was actually going to be a thing, the Snyder Cut was actually going to be made, I took it in a response of like, okay, cool. It wasn't something that I was necessarily clamoring for. I felt like after the underperformance of the Justice League movie, the 2017 cut, which I saw it in theaters, I even own it because Warner Brothers sent it to me to review, and I enjoyed it for what it was. It had a big Saturday morning cartoon vibe to it, which on its own, okay, it's disposable fun and all, but when you take into account the previous two films it's following up, especially since it's trying to be consistent with those themes and the tone, it definitely sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And going into this, I wasn't dreading it. I was actually intrigued, by what I was in for. And I was pretty flabbergasted too by how much I enjoyed it. I kind of love it. Like it's a very fascinating, unique superhero movie in general in regards to its existence for one, and
Right.
two, it's definitely Zack Snyder like wearing his heart on his sleeve with these characters. And like you said, the characters, all of them get a chance to shine. Cyborg, played by Ray Fisher, who was given the short end of the stick in the theatrical cut, he is the biggest upgrade here from the previous version because he actually has a full arc. And Ray Fisher, for one, I think this is a star-making performance from him, and I hope we see more of him. I mean, I'd love to see him come back as this character, but given like his public battle with Warner Brothers, it's definitely a bit of a shaky road for that. But I hope his career still skyrockets because he has a lot of talent, and obviously like Aquaman and The Flash, they have some fun moments here. And by the end of it, I was kind of dumbfounded when I realized I kind of want to see where this goes, but obviously that's probably not going to happen, at least right now,
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like HBO Max, if that is a big if they ever wanted to follow it up, I feel like HBO Max is the perfect outlet for this, like treat it like a mini series if you wanted to. And yeah, like I was pleasantly surprised, and like you, I definitely will pick this up on 4K Blu-ray. So, it will be a great presentation. And honestly, if the IMAX near me opens up and they decide to do presentations of it, I'd consider checking it out because seeing this on the big screen, and especially since the aspect ratio kind of situation is fit for the IMAX image, I feel like it would look great with that presentation. And Snyder said that if they presented it on the big screen, sorry, there would be a 10-minute intermission halfway through. So thank God for that potential thing. But yeah, like, so you and I both enjoyed it. Now we're going to kind of give our quick favorite moments that were spoilery overall. So what would you say stood out to you most? Like some scenes or moments that you just found yourself loving?
So since Snyder was the creator of this movie, I'm kind of cheating here a little bit. One no moment is when Superman first comes back to life, and that whole sequence of them trying to like calm him down. And there's that moment where Flash is about to run around him, and you have that slow-mo moment where he's like fighting everybody else, and his eyes just like tilt, and because he starts fighting Flash while he's in the Speed Force, which I thought just insane concept. I think all my favorite moments in this involve Flash. The ending with Flash, where basically the entire Justice League loses, they all die, and then he's like, "All right, I got to reverse time now." And he uses that whole thing with his father when he visited him in jail, and how he's like using that as a motivator to like slowly go, and like visually, musically with Junkie XL, like I was like, "There's no," I'm like, "I'm so invested in this,"
Yes, like
and then
the score from Junkie XL here is fantastic.
Yeah.
And like I love Danny Elfman, and I'd be lying if I didn't get some pleasure hearing his old Batman theme or even elements of the John Williams theme from the theatrical cut. But
Sure.
as I said in my video review, even though that's fun in the moment, it kind of made the film feel even more like it was made by committee, which, obviously it was
Yeah.
based on what we saw. But Junkie XL, his score is great. And you mentioned that big Flash scene, which is probably the biggest like emotional moment in regards to like the action climax with all the characters. I love that scene too. I thought it was fantastic. And in a way, that scene kind of feels like a tribute or a callback to that famous ending from the original Superman movie from Richard
Oh,
Donner and Christopher Reeve,
sure.
where Lois dies and Superman is heartbroken, obviously, and then he reverses time so he could bring her back. in a way that this scene, because that's what Barry kind of does when he has to trigger everything back when everyone is gone, it mm-hmm. feels like a great kind of a continuation of that. And yeah. I found that riveting. Like once he gets into contact with Cyborg, which also leads into another emotional moment where Cyborg is being tested, obviously, by like the image of his parents and the image of himself before his accident. That line where he mentions, "I'm not broken and I'm not alone." Oh,
yep.
Like,
yep.
That hit me. That hit me very much so.
They did a great job developing Cyborg.
Yes, yes, indeed. Were there any other moments you loved?
I'm trying to think of specific moments. I don't know why I keep thinking about, people keep like bringing up pictures of Ben Affleck with the glasses and the jacket look when he comes back to Alfred. I forgot what part of the movie this is, but there's a part also later on where Alfred is like kind of like questioning Bruce, and Ben Affleck goes like, "You gotta have faith, Alfred."
Yeah.
And I don't know why that keeps repeating in my head, but I think it's like the character arc there where like he was so brooding and like angry at Superman in this whole the last movie. Now he's kind of like he's finding his like spirits again. It kind of
Jeremy Irons is a perfect Alfred, really. It's a shame that obviously Ben and that whole version of Batman didn't really get to have its full potential realized given the mm-hmm. situation at Warner Brothers, you know. But like there was that moment with Alfred that he has with Diana in regards to making the tea that I thought was like, okay, that's Alfred. That's perfect Alfred right
there.
That was
funny.
And mm-hmm. all. And also in regards to Cyborg, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when we learn about his powers and we see him and he sees this woman that's basically been like evicted. And then he comes in and gives her like hundreds of stimmies, essentially, you know, to help her out. Like what if Cyborg was behind the stimmies all along? You know, like in America, like we need him to help us out with that. That's a great Robin Hood moment from him, you know, and it actually fits well for Ray Fisher. Cause if you know Ray Fisher in real life, like politically, he's very progressive overall. And, you know, like that kind of whole thing of him being like a Robin Hood as that character kind of makes sense, not just for Cyborg, but it fits for Ray Fisher as a person in general, you know. And like, I guess overall, like, sure, I agree with you in terms of the Snyderisms kind of get a little too much. Slow-mo works in some cases. Like, when it involves the Flash, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Even in some other action sequences, it makes perfect sense. But he goes a little overboard on the slow-mo here and there where it's like, okay, we get it. okay, Zach. Like, it looks great. Don't get me wrong. But it's like, do you think you had to make that whole moment of Arthur Curry walking into the water as he drinks whiskey?
Wait, did you like when the woman starts singing afterwards too, like as like a kind of like a tribute to him, like he came and gave us his sweater and she starts like operatically singing?
I didn't hate it. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't think it needs to be there. It's kind of cool. Like we don't see stuff like that in other comic book movies. It's very kind of, it felt very like art house in a weird way, you know, where it's like you have these people just singing. You know, like this.
Very
this
Robert ballad. Eggers from like Lighthouse, kind of.
very much so. It's just kind of bizarre, but it's little things here and there that definitely make it longer than it needs to be. And also, I think we'd be remiss not to mention the epilogue that was filmed, as well as the very last scene of this movie. You know, so feel free to explain the epilogue if you want to.
So it seems like from my understanding is that Zack Snyder used he had some extra money left over from the $70 million he got from Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And they told him not to do this and he did it anyway. So it's basically it's back to the nightmare sequence from Batman v Superman, where we see that, I guess, apparently Darkseid, the main villain, wins, takes over the planet. And you have a few remaining superheroes who are still alive. So you have Deathstroke, you have Flash, you have Mera, you have a couple of Batman and Joker there and
Cyborg,
Yeah, and then, so they're having this conversation, and Joker and Batman are working together, pretty much. And it's just them having this little exchange, this dialogue exchange.
Yeah.
And just kind of Joker and Batman going back and forth, and Batman curses in this, and Joker's
it's like he's been waiting years to just tell the Joker, like give him the finger, essentially. He's been waiting so long to just tell him off, because in this nightmare scenario, Lois Lane is likely, like, I'm pretty sure she died.
And but we find out about Bruce.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. And in BVS, there's that whole nightmare sequence where Barry meets Bruce, like time traveling, telling him Lois is the key. And because of that, this leads to Superman, you know, going crazy. And it's kind of, it looks like the movies that Zack Snyder was trying to build up to were going to be more like Injustice. And given the fact that there's a very less likely chance that these movies will ever get made, there's an exhibit, I believe, in Dallas that shows like the ideas that Zack Snyder had for Justice League 2 and 3, which would be a continuation of like a post-apocalyptic story for the Justice League, and where Darkseid is obviously involved. And I'd be lying to say that didn't paint my curiosity in a big light if it ever becomes a thing, you know. And besides that, it ends with Bruce Wayne waking up, which, by the way, Ben looks great like in that last scene.
Yeah, he does. He's not getting coffee or anything from Dunkin' in this. He's just laying in bed.
It was nice to see that he clearly looks healthier after, you know, like because making these movies, it was just bad timing in his life, unfortunately. And yeah, like he had a lot of personal issues he had to deal with. And then we see him walk out the door and we see this caped figure whom at first I thought it was going to be Clark.
Yeah, me too.
And then it's revealed that it was none other than John Johns, aka Martian Manhunter, which we met in one scene in the film early on where Lois and Martha have a conversation when it turns out to be Martian Manhunter, whom mm-hmm. was played by Harry Lennox, who was that figure in Man of Steel that we first meet him, which actually in a way makes it more interesting looking back at that film that guy was actually Martian Manhunter the whole time.
Yeah, he was letting Superman play it out. Let me see how this guy does. If things get I'll show up.
I will say it kind of gave me Wong in Infinity War vibes, his character.
Bye, bitches.
You know, but I think Harry Lennox fits the role well, and I love his voice as Martian Manhunter. You know, like he has a great conversation with Bruce at the end, telling him his parents are proud of him, you know. And
mm-hmm. Nice.
But yeah, like overall, I dug this. I found it to be very entertaining and surprisingly engaging almost the entire time, even though you do feel the length. It's well paced for a 4-hour movie, you know, and
yeah.
I feel like if they decided to do this as the original theatrical version, obviously it'd be cut down to probably 2:45, maybe 3 hours, you know. And I think mm-hmm. like just to cut the pacing down, this could have gone over well with the fans and even some critics if this came through, because this movie I was personally surprised at the reception it received when I saw the tomato meter score, you know. And like overall, I give credit to Zack Snyder and the team for putting together a very entertaining superhero movie that I'm just glad that I got a Justice League movie that I can safely say I could recommend to people, because I've waited.
It's comforting. It's just like like you don't have to we don't have to be like I don't know. There's no messy waters anymore, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, and I'm definitely excited for the future of this whole franchise, even though it feels like Warner Brothers executives feel pretty out of touch in regards to what they could be doing with, like, I feel like the executives don't know what they have with these characters and these stories. And I feel like, and I'm not someone who feels like, oh, Kevin Feige is the god amongst men or anything else, but You understand why, like, that franchise is the most successful film and TV franchise of all time now, you know. And even though a lot of the movies feel similar, which we'll get into, we'll discuss more about the Kevin Feigeisms and the MCU when we get into the next discussion. But I feel like if they had somebody at the top that allowed, for one, like, I'll give Warner Brothers credit in regards to allowing directors to have their own voice, which the Suicide Squad looks like it's having, or the Batman looks like it has, you know, with Matt Reeves. But I feel like it's so fascinating because the studio mandated version from 2017 fell with a thud. And then this version, a 4-hour long cut on HBO Max, people are really digging it. Even people who have harsh opinions on BVS and Man of Steel are digging this. And you know, I'm curious to see where things go. And, you know, like, that was Zack Snyder's Justice League. I'm happy we got it. You know?
Yeah.
I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah.
We
live in a really, it's a really interesting time. It's been an interesting time for people who like comic book movies. And
yeah. And this, yeah, it was a, let's just say it was a great weekend for comic book movie and TV show fans like you and me and likely all of our listeners and viewers. Because next up, the day after the Justice League Snyder Cut dropped, the first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier dropped, and I was pretty stoked. And also, by the way, like, Disney Plus announced that this was the biggest premiere for any of their shows, including The Mandalorian and WandaVision. You know, I think it's because there's been a lot of hype. People love Captain America and that universe. And they've been marketing the hell out of this thing, like, everywhere, like, you know. But so it's the first episode. It's obviously about Sam Wilson, played by Anthony Mackie, and Bucky, obviously played by Sebastian Stan. They're the titular heroes here. It takes place 6 months after Avengers Endgame, a few months after WandaVision, which is interesting. And we basically follow up with our two friends after they... It's basically like they're adjusting to their life after Steve is basically gone now. Yeah. And it opens up with this really great action sequence with Sam.
I've heard other people say it, but it lives up to like the potential of what we've seen in the theater with these characters over the past 10 years, where it feels like you're watching the, like, a part of like a feature film. Like, the money shows, the whatever they put into this, like, it shows. And it also shows how versatile Falcon is as a hero and how he deals with adversaries and obstacles.
Whenever he uses Red Wing and everything else in all of that, like, all those little moments. That's the thing that I always like about the Marvel movies, is that they find a way to, they do a good job blending in real world locations with all these superheroes in the action, because it blends in well. There's some great stunt work here. And, you know, Anthony Mackie is great, obviously. And like, watching that opening scene with the action, I'm thinking, wow, this feels like Captain America 4. Like, this feels like a movie overall.
A little bit. It gave me very like Iron Man 1/Winter Soldier vibes.
Definitely. This definitely feels like the natural progression from the Winter Soldier. I mean, I know Civil War is technically a Captain America movie in title. I still contend that movie is Avengers 2.5. You know, even though Captain America is probably the de facto protagonist in that movie, I think just the mere presence of Tony and other characters in that movie kind of make it more an Avengers 2.5 than it does a third Captain America film. You know, like, I get the arguments on the other side in that regard, but I still contend, yeah, this is Avengers 2.5. And I treat it as an Avengers movie, you know, when I rewatch it. So this one feels, even though Steve is gone, obviously, you know, this feels like the right natural progression for Captain America as the symbol and the character. And then after all this is taken care of, you know, Sam goes back to Washington. And at first we think, oh, he's finally going to accept the mantle with the shield. But it turns out he's giving the shield away to the museum, because I guess he was a big fan of Indiana Jones. So he thinks
it belongs in the museum.
He doesn't feel right. As he said at the end of Endgame, he said it feels like it belongs to someone else when Steve gives it to him. And surprise, another friend of ours shows up that I was really happy to see for this one scene.
I wasn't ready to see Don Cheadle. I was kind of just kind of like, wait, oh yeah, that's right, you are alive. You would probably be here for this.
The way he just pops up, like, just it wasn't like a big reveal. It was like, oh, he's just there. It's like, oh, that's a nice surprise.
Yeah, I like that choice of them not like making it like this, like, look, it's Don Cheadle. He's just kind of, he's there for the ceremony. Like, he would be there. Yeah. It makes sense.
It feels natural, you know? It's like that's one of his fellow Avengers, you know? And he's also a fellow soldier. So it's like he's there supporting his friend, you know? And then after Sam decides not to take the mantle, he and Rhodey, they have a big discussion about the whole situation as they walk through the exhibit of Steve Rogers, where the shield is being presented, you know, and you feel obviously why Sam just doesn't feel comfortable yet or not ready yet, which then brings us to our friend Bucky, who is still having nightmares and flashbacks to his experiences in the past.
I don't know why I thought he was imagining that. I didn't think he was actually like, that was actually like an action he committed. But then like we get introduced, we'll get into it, like with the father, the aspect of like the relationship he has with that older gentleman, and how that connects with this nightmare he has.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bucky has been going to therapy for a few months after the events of Endgame and losing his best friend. You know, like, he basically, like, both Sam and Bucky, they both lost their best friend. And they're still adjusting to life now that he's gone. And in Bucky's case, it's probably even harder for him at the moment. Because for one, sure, like, his therapist mentioned that he's getting pardoned given you know, he's trying to pay for his sins, essentially, when he was, like, under the control of Hydra as the Winter Soldier. But then also, like, he has no family, and he has very little friends. As the therapist mentioned, he's not even answering Sam's texts, and he's been struggling to adjust to life. He's 100-plus years old, and he has no idea what he can do. Like, he mentions that he had peace in Wakanda when he was there, and that's about it. But then, like, we see him, and he's trying to make amends with this guy, Yori, this old man. And he takes him to this restaurant, and Yori, you know, he's being kind to him, trying to get him to go out with this girl that works at that restaurant, you know, which is a nice little moment for Bucky to kind of adjust to real life. But then, Yori has a really sad flashback regarding his late son, because he loved I forgot what it was. I think it was like a red bean spring roll, I believe. And we realize, oh, Bucky is trying to make amends here, and this is going to get sad.
It's like the opposite of Billy Madison, where he has the list that he's crossing off. Like, I got all these people that I bullied when I was in high school. So, like, it's like the Steve Buscemi thing here.
Yeah.
But this older guy is cute. I like him. I hope nothing happens. Yeah, maybe.
It was definitely heart-wrenching when after the a charming scene where Bucky has this date, you know, with this girl, you know, and
she was very really easy nice to go out with him too. She was like, yeah, I'll go. Like Sebastian Stan. So, I mean,
she doesn't. Yeah, but she also probably doesn't know. I'm assuming she doesn't know all that much about him as a, you know.
No, she's super oblivious to it. She has no
idea. As a weapon. Yeah, like, she probably has no idea. Oh, you're one of the Avengers, you know, that's interesting. And then what's interesting is that, like, after he abruptly leaves the date, which is going pretty well, like, they're playing Battleship, they have chemistry, but then he just gets so guilty over the thought of, like, how he's spending time with Yuri, the old man, and then he visits his apartment, and you see Yuri has a shrine of his son, like a Buddhist shrine, and it just makes it hurt all the more. You know, which all this is going on. Meanwhile, interestingly enough, Sam and Bucky don't meet up in this episode. And going back to Sam, we meet his sister. We meet his nephews in Louisiana. She's having trouble with the boat that belonged to their parents. That's their family business. Typical, like, grown up brother sister issues in regards to, like, how they want to continue their family legacy. You know, Sam is adamant about keeping the boat. She's reluctant to, given the financial situation. You know, like, they're having trouble with the banks, which will probably play into the themes of legacy of systemic racism, obviously, with all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, we basically get to learn more about Sam and his family life, which I loved. I loved seeing more about him, you know.
I wasn't expecting it to get this, like, low-key and candid and intimacy of seeing, like, his home life and his family life.
Yeah.
And, like, you kind of, like, you just, like, right in the gut with him. And, like, I feel it's just, I don't know, seeing him, like, struggle on the boat and talking with his sister. And, it really humanized him more. Like, I didn't really care. I'm not a big Falcon fan, but, like, it's nice seeing, like, details like this to flesh out the character.
Yeah, and especially, like, the scene in the bank where you have that banker. He's obviously, he recognizes him as an Avenger, and we have that really sad moment where he asks him about how Avengers get paid, assuming that Tony pays them all.
Money? I don't know what that is. Tony's dead. I got no loans from Tony.
That's crazy, you know, and like, how unfortunately,
goodwill.
Like,
a lot of goodwill, as he says.
And unfortunately, the loan couldn't approve for them in regards to the boat that they're trying to take care of. And, you know, that it adds more issues for Sam to deal with, you know, but it's nothing compared to what he has to deal with at the very end of this episode, though. Yeah. So how about what happened?
I'm forgetting what happened already.
Okay. Oh my God. So to refresh you, he's still spending time with his sister. And then his sister is watching the news.
Okay. Well, this makes a lot of sense. This happened. Oh, you want to give the shield up? All right, we'll just give it to some other white guy. Put him in a Captain America costume.
And that's Wyatt Russell that plays him, the U.S. agent, whom the government has appointed as the new Captain America. And the moment he pops up in that in that mask and everything else with the shield, that grin on his face, you instantly just feel like this isn't right.
He has such a derpy face under that mask, under that helmet.
Like, no offense to Wyatt Russell, but his face is perfect for a character that I feel like the showrunners want us to hate.
Yeah. Oh, you know, like, and you know he's gonna have some really complicated like history or past. Yeah. And how he feels about certain things.
It's definitely going to be
not fun.
It's going to be a definitely an interesting dynamic here, you know, especially since Sam is realizing what they're doing to him, given this whole situation. It's going to be very
it's fucked tense. Up.
Oh, definitely screwed up for him. And also, like, I also forgot to mention, like, one of Sam's friends, like, from the Air Force, he's undercover as he's trying to see what's going on here in regards to this group called, I think it's the Flag Smashers.
Yeah, you got it. Mm-hmm.
He gets beat up badly, and he FaceTime calls him in regards to, like, what he's noticing about these Flag Smashers, which is this group that, as he mentioned in the beginning of the episode, they felt like life was better during the blip, you know, when, like, after the blip, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see how that's going to tie into this whole series. And, you know, unlike WandaVision, where WandaVision definitely felt like, oh, this is TV and this is meant for TV. You know, this one feels, so far, at least from what we're seeing, this one feels it's basically a Captain America movie, but they're prolonging it to be more of a mini series that will further get into, like, the character. That's what, like I said, in the WandaVision episodes we did, what I love about what Marvel's doing with these shows is that they're bringing characters, the supporting heroes, to our main titular heroes. And through these shows, giving more time to develop them, they're making them just as interesting, if not even more compelling, than our main heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, and because we get to spend more time with Sam and Bucky this time around, we're learning more about them and what makes them tick. And I am so excited to see more of their dynamic and how they're going to basically reluctantly become best friends, I think, you know, from this whole
scenario. Or not. Maybe they won't. But it seems,
not. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wonder what it's like they don't want together.
I feel like it's like they don't want to admit it, but it's like, yeah, you're going to be my boy, you know, like in this whole story.
You're my boy, Blue. Yeah. But yeah, it's like when you have a connection with somebody, but you don't want to admit it. Yeah, you're like kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this.
You feel that in Civil War, and you definitely get a sense is that as they spend more time with each other, because obviously, like, Bucky definitely has a bit of Steve in him, given the fact that he grew up in the same time as Steve. I mean, another moment I loved is when Bucky brings the bouquet of flowers to the date. You know, very old fashioned, very classic. You know, so. Overall, like, what did you think of this premiere?
So, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't underwhelmed. I was just kind of like, I just kind of like watched it and I enjoyed it for what it was. It's the first episode, and what you're saying is a limited series, so it's kind of like the beginning of a movie where you're just kind of getting introduced to the settings and the characters and where they're at. And
it's more methodical.
And I don't know if it's gonna. I feel like as we go on, it's gonna get more impactful and more engaging, and I'm probably gonna like it more once we see Sharon Carter and Baron Zemo and we see more.
That's right, they don't even appear in this premiere yet.
No, and I wonder how everybody factors into this, like where's Baron Zemo factor into, is he working with this new Captain America figure? Somewhere else, like I am curious. I have questions about how this all comes together. I'm looking forward to seeing the action. There's probably a lot of more action sequences too that we're not even seeing between Falcon and Bucky.
Definitely. And I'm also very much looking forward to I think what I'm most looking forward to in this show is just more of just Falcon and Winter Soldier together. Mm-hmm. You know, just their action together. Because you see in the trailer, like, there are moments where it looks like they're sharing the shield. Like, they're working together with it, you know, and like, I'm excited to see those action sequences and also their camaraderie. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm more excited because of the show, just what it does for the characters itself. I do believe that we're going to hear more tie-ins and teases for what's going on in the rest of the universe. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, at the very end, I'm not expecting it necessarily, but if we kind of get a tease in regards to other characters and other shows in the universe, like, maybe they're on the news and they learn about, like, wait, what's going on with Wanda? Maybe not, like, it's not gonna be a plot point, but more it's gonna be like, they're hearing about their fellow Avengers and what they've been up to and everything else. Because I feel like that's, you know, the movies did it. And I feel like the shows probably would have some tie in there too, even though that is going to lead to a different movie, obviously, with WandaVision to Doctor Strange. But given the tied in nature of it all, you wouldn't be surprised if like all of these heroes kind of have to keep in touch with each other in regards to what's going on, you know, just to beware, because all these heroes certainly do not want to have another Thanos situation again. That's the last thing they want.
No, you don't want to repeat your mistakes. You want to learn from that. And
definitely, especially when you're, one, you're currently in the Air Force working with them, and two, you're also still dealing with your own PTSD as the Winter Soldier, and also from losing your buddy and basically disappearing for 5 years, you know. So anyways, that was the season premiere of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's crazy. 2 weeks ago, we just had the finale of one show from Marvel. And 2 weeks later, we have this. And we had a new DC movie that same weekend, too. Like,
and we might be getting Black Widow in a month and a half, too.
Fingers crossed that theaters near me open up by then. I think they'll keep it there. I think they'll keep it there.
They're saying it's going to be last-minute like decision-making, but I'm leaning towards that, too.
And also, like, it feels like, you know, after a whole year that felt like a drought in regards to this kind of content, obviously, we didn't get a lot of movies and TV shows in this genre. We did. We got some, but not in to the degree it was. It feels like March, like at least beginning with WandaVision in January, but then March just kind of gave us a 1-2 punch in one weekend of the season premiere of Falcon Winter Soldier and the Snyder Cut of Justice League. And it was definitely a fun weekend for me in that regard as a fan of these characters, getting excited for comic books again, which I always am, but this week in particular, I just felt great to be a fan of both Marvel and DC. Someone who wants both of them to succeed. Well, Marvel will already succeed. They've already proven themselves. I'm someone who always roots for DC. You know, it's like when you're a Sega fan in the 90s versus Nintendo, kind of in a way where it's like you do enjoy that brand itself, but you also are rooting for something that is the underdog. And I feel like DC, even though they've had hits, I feel like they're still kind of an underdog, but I feel like that could definitely change in the next few years.
Oh yeah, we could see a tide change in the 2020s. I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, they have a lot of potential. They have a lot of exciting projects, and I'm excited for what they have, just like I'm excited for what Marvel has overall. So yeah, that was a great weekend overall for superhero fans.
Oh yeah. I'm just glad that we have stuff to watch. It's nice to look forward to it every week to be like something's coming out to watch. Like even it could get oversaturated, but right now it's just the word comforting again comes to mind. It's just
I feel like the oversaturation thing, I get that argument, but given that we had a whole year drought in regards to this whole thing, you know, a bunch of movies were delayed and everything, I'm happy that we're getting this stuff right now. It's comfort food, definitely.
Oh, sure. Yeah, not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. So anyways, guys, that was the latest episode of the Blank Green Canvas podcast, the longest title of any episode of this podcast ever. Zack Snyder's Justice League and The Falcon and The Winter Soldier.
Lots of words. Yes.
And can it be beaten? A lot of ands.
Can it be beaten? Maybe one day.
Maybe someday. But I just got to say, once again, it's always a pleasure having you on, John. It's just so much fun. I had a great time with you on the WandaVision stuff, and I look forward to potentially more discussions in the future, obviously.
And thank you again for inviting me on. I always have fun talking to you about this stuff. And I'm all for it, week in and week out. I'm looking forward to more talks.
Where can always people fun. Find you, John?
Everybody can find me at pretty much any social media platform at Mothman Jones, which is M-A-2-F's man. Jones. And I'm actually making a video soon about Zack Snyder's Justice League, and hoping to have it out before the end of the weekend. So look forward to wonderful. That.
I definitely look forward to seeing your video. And speaking of which, you could find my video on Zack Snyder's Justice League on the YouTube channel on Blank Green Canvas. And once again, I am Noah Villaverde of Blank Green Canvas. You could find me on Facebook, Blank Green Canvas there, on Twitter, which is Noah_Villaverde, which is also the same username for my Instagram. And you could find me on Letterboxd as well through that. So anyways, that was the latest episode of the Blank Green Canvas podcast. I am Noah Villaverde, and this has been...
I am John Maffio, and this has been a grand old time.
It has been a grand old time, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, guys.